This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Uncertainty. Self-doubt. Stressing about not knowing where to start. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Word art. Sorry, live, laugh, lovers. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
We get a lot of text here on the Okanagan Jeweler Talking text line, 504-260-1870. Every now and then, one of them will tickle my fancy, and it's a long text, but I'll read the second to last sentence of it. All that stuff we learned in civics was BS. Well, I got to tell you, however crude that may sound, that's a thought I have, especially after I took this job decades ago and started to delve into politics and what actually is involved and how it actually works, as opposed to what they teach you in civics. But again, I guess when you're raising kids, you can't jade them early on, right? You got to tell them ideally the way the world works, and then from there they learn their own lessons. I know they say you should never discuss religion or politics. Well, buckle up, because we're going to talk about both of them together with Jeffrey Lehman, a professor of political science at the University of Notre Dame. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Morning. Very good. How are you?
I'm okay, sir. Thanks for taking the time with us. You know, one thing reading the study that you all did, it makes me think that the adage that while people are not predictable, groups of people are, right?
Sure. No, that's very true.
Tell me about this study and how the relationship between religion and U.S. politics, and how you even go about, I guess, quantifying this or establishing who believes what religiously and then who believes what politically.
Well, we do it through surveys, mostly taking random samples of all Americans. We've done my colleague David Campbell and I have done a series of surveys over a decade from about 2012 to 2021 that we called the Secular America Studies, and trying to get a handle on this growing group of people that that are generally known as the nuns, not the nuns that wear habits, but the people who, when they're asked what their religion is, say none, no affiliation. That's been growing rapidly. If that was a religious tradition itself, it would now be the largest one in the United States, bigger than Catholics, bigger than evangelicals, four times larger than Southern Baptists, for example. We've been trying to get at the question of, what are the consequences of this rise of the nuns for politics, and what are the causes, and is politics one of the causes? On the consequences side, what we have found is that you can't really think of the nuns as just one big block of people. What you have,
Professor, let me jump in for a second. When you say nuns, N-O-N-E-S, are you talking about non-religious?
Yes. Yeah, non-religious people who have no religious affiliation.
We're an extremely Catholic town, and I just want to use that instead, because people tune in for a couple of minutes here, a couple of minutes there, they're going to hear nuns and go ballistic. So we're talking about non-religious, if we can.
Non-religious people, you really have to distinguish between people who are simply non-religious, who never attend church, don't pray, don't read scripture, but don't really believe anything else. And then there is a segment of those people that we call secularists or seculars. And those are people that are really committed to secular beliefs, belief in science and reason and evidence as a basis for understanding the world, get their, some might get their path to living from the Bible. These people get it from books of philosophy or science.
So wait, let me slow down for a second. So there are, there is a difference between secular and non-religious. Those should not be used interchangeably, right?
Correct.
And what is the difference?
As we say, well, the difference is, as we say in the book, being non-religious is not being something, not having religious beliefs, not attending worship, not praying. Being a secular means what you are. It's a set of positive beliefs about science, reason, evidence, as the basis for sort of navigating the world, navigating life, finding meaning. You know, it's, you often hear the term secular humanism, and humanist thought means we don't need to look to a God or something supernatural for the foundations, our moral foundations. We look to human history and human experience. So these seculars or these secular humanists are people who have these positive beliefs in the secular, in human experience, science, reason, evidence as sort of their rules for living, just as many other people have religion, scripture, church as their basis for living. And those two groups of people, the non-religious and the seculars, are very different politically.
Are seculars and non-religious both atheist, or maybe non-religious may not be, but I don't know. You tell me, Professor.
Well, many many of the secular people would classify themselves as atheists, but not all, and actually not even most. Some would think of themselves as agnostics. Some might think of themselves as being, you know, spiritual but not religious. And our argument is that you can even be religious and secular. You can participate in religion in some level. You could be a good, you know, a Catholic. You could be an Episcopalian. You could be a Jewish person, but still have this strong belief in science and reason and evidence and human experience as a way of sort of navigating the world. So we actually do find some overlap between people who are religious and people who are secular. Most secular people are not religious, but most non-religious people are not secular. In other words, they just sort of don't believe anything. They don't believe in religion. They don't participate in religion, but they also don't hold these secular beliefs that the secularists do.
So let me jump in real quick and ask for you to define the difference, because I'm going to text on this, and we presume things that sometimes people aren't aware of. Difference between an atheist and an agnostic?
Yeah, an atheist is just somebody who is sure that there is no God. An agnostic is somebody who is not sure that there is a God. So that's the difference. In terms of politics, there's really no difference we found, but an atheist is just a level of certainty that an agnostic doesn't have.
I want to open the text line here at 504-260-1870, officially the Oakland Art Jeweler Talk and Text Line. If y'all have any questions or comments about yourself, your religious beliefs, your political beliefs, you're welcome to text them in, and I'll pass them along to Professor Jeffrey Lehman, a professor of political science at the University of Notre Dame, about this study and this book that they put out about changing religious landscape and what it means for U.S. politics. Professor, let me throw my own case in here, okay? I have cobbled together my own set of religious beliefs. I don't go to church anymore. Mm-hmm. I don't mean expose too much of my life here. I pray the rosary daily but I think a lot of the Catholic stuff is crazy. I think the Bible is a nice book of stories on how to live your life, but I don't think it's literal. Where would that put me besides, you know, crazy?
Well, it might put you in the spiritual but not religious category, mm-hmm. which is also a growing group of Americans. Depending on the survey and the questions they're asked, you might be classified as non-religious because you're not really participating in organized religion. You have some conventional religious beliefs, and if you're praying the rosary, you're obviously engaged in a prayer life. So I wouldn't classify you as non-religious, but a lot of the people in the non-religious category, this growing group of Americans, they sometimes float back and forth between religion and non-religion. They don't float back and forth between daily mass attendance and not being religious, but they might float back and forth between sort of a Christmas and Easter Catholic or attend mass a few times a year and being non-religious, just sort of depending on how they feel about religion at a certain point in time. And what we found is that how people feel about religion can have a lot to do with politics and how closely they see politics mixed up in religion.
I think by myself, my own personal judgment is if I go to church on Easter and Christmas, then that makes me a hypocrite. Because if I go on Easter and Christmas, I should go every Sunday. That's just the way I look at it, logically. So I guess I'm kind of secular in that I do believe in science, I do believe in philosophy, I do believe in logic.
Yes. Yeah, and that's we would classify you as a secular person, and we might classify you as one of our religious secularists, you know, people who have some religious practice, and some of these people actually do attend worship services. But they also believe in science, philosophy, logic, reason, evidence pretty strongly. That's where we would put you. And politically, what we find is that those religious secularists are actually the most likely to participate in politics.
That's right. Keep going. Keep going with your analysis of me. I'll tell you if you're right or wrong. You're right there also. Go ahead.
They tend to be Democrats. They tend to be relatively liberal on most political issues.
I'm fiscally conservative, socially liberal. I don't care what you do with your life so long as you don't affect me. But when it comes to taxes, I want you to be responsible with the money you take from me. Am I fitting right in?
Yes. Yes. I think so. I think that fits pretty well.
Well, thank you, Professor. I appreciate the therapy session. Bill my insurance company. I'm just kidding. Let me take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about these four groups. Religionists, non-religionists, secularists, and religious secularists, and how they vote and how that translates into politics. Interesting conversation with Jeffrey Lehman. He and his partner, David Campbell, got a book out about religion and politics and different groups of people and how they tend to lean, etc. If you want to tell me a little bit about yourself, text in at 504-260-1870, and I'll pass it along. Back in a flash, WWL. 9:27, talking to an interesting gentleman, a professor of political science at the University of Notre Dame, Jeffrey Lehman, about a book that he and David Campbell wrote, 2021 Secular Surge, A New Fault in American Politics. A couple of texts real quick, Professor. Somebody said, everybody listening knew you were a liberal before you said anything, Tommy, so don't worry about that. Well, that's no secret. I've for years been saying socially, I don't care what you do. I think it's all about control. I don't want the government controlling socially what people do. Unless it hurts me, then I do care. And also, again, be very conservative with my tax money. Other people are texting in about, why do you pray to this one? Why do you pray to that one? Why do you pray to the other one? Let's talk about I guess the four groups that the book divides people in, religionists, non-religionists, secularists, and religious secularists.
Yes.
Have at it, Professor.
These are groups, you know, we have our surveys. We ask people a number of questions about what they do religiously, what they believe, how they practice faith. Do they practice faith? Do they pray? And we ask a series of questions about, you know, belief in philosophy, science, evidence, reason. So we have scales of how religious you are and how secular you are. And based on those two scales, we can form these four groups. And so the groups that you would think about when you think about religion and politics are religionists. These are people who are high in religion. They pray, they go to church, they read the Bible, and they're low on our secularism scale. They don't give much credence to philosophy, science, evidence. And then on the other end of the spectrum, you have our secularists. These are people who place a lot of emphasis on logic, philosophy, science, reason, evidence. But they don't, you know, they're not religious. They don't believe in God. They don't belong to a religious denomination. They don't attend. They don't pray. But then there are sort of these hybrid groups. The non-religionists are the people who are low on both. They're not religious. They're not attending. They're not reading scripture. They're not praying much. But they're also not secular.
It says here, Professor, let me jump in real quick. It says they're defined by what they are not, not what they are. What does that mean?
Well, it just means that they're kind of nothing, at least when it comes to religion and secularism. They're neither religious nor secular. So these are just people who aren't particularly interested in religion, don't believe it, but they also are not strongly philosophical or evidence-based or based in humanism or reason. And then the religious seculars are some of both. These are people who are attending, do belong to a faith, but also strongly believe in logic, science, reason, evidence.
So can you assign different religions to different groups or not really?
Not really. I mean, it's possible. We're not. So which religion you are is not part of this, but you're much more likely to find, say, the true religionists or the religious secularists in different denominations. There's not a lot of evangelical Christians who are religious secularists. These are people who are what we call religionists. They rely on religion, faith, way more than evidence, logic, science.
If it's in the Bible, it's true. That kind of thing. I'm not judging. I'm just giving an example.
Hey,
I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code MAN at checkout. That's harrys.com, code MAN. Enjoy.
I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
If you have health insurance, you might be able to see a personal dietitian for $0 out of pocket. Nourish connects you with a dietitian that fits your needs, covered by your insurance. Nourish accepts hundreds of insurance plans, and 94% of patients pay $0 out of pocket. Meet with your dietitian online and message them anytime through the Nourish app. With hundreds of 5-star reviews from real patients, you know you're in good hands. Find your dietitian at usenourish.com. That's usenourish.com.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet, and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
That's exactly right. You know, they're going to believe what a pastor, a priest, a religious leader says more than a scientist or a doctor. The religious secularists, you're more likely to find them in, say, an Episcopal church or a Lutheran church or in a Jewish synagogue, especially a Reformed Jewish synagogue, some Catholic churches. You're not going to find a lot of them in a Church of God or an Assemblies of God or a Primitive Baptist church or something like that. So there are some religious differences, but that's not really the core of what we're getting at.
So how does that translate into the voting booth or political beliefs or political support? And then, I guess, supporting the party to the point of donating and being an activist in the party, et cetera?
Yeah, so the kind of core of our party coalitions are the religionists and the secularists. The religionists are what we think of when we think of the Republican Party. We think of the religious right, the people who are hardcore Republicans, hardcore Trump supporters or Bush or Reagan supporters in the past. And they not only vote Republican and identify themselves as Republicans, but they're more likely to participate beyond that, to do some work for a party or candidate, to give some money. And on the other side, the secularists have really become the core of the Democratic Party. You know, the Democratic Party used to have a strong religious core, especially in the black church, but also among white Catholics. And there's still a lot of that. But the real core of the Democratic coalition has become the secularists. And they are the people that are most likely to vote Democratic, most likely to be active. They're also the people who are most likely in primary season to support the most liberal Democrats, people like Bernie Sanders or AOC or Elizabeth Warren. So if you think about the religious right, which we've known in the Republican Party for now more than 40 years, the sort of parallel to that in the Democratic Party is this secular left, although the secular left is not nearly as well organized as the religious right is or has been.
So how does, and I don't know if you all looked at this or not, but when it comes to either a Democratic or a Republican candidate, does the behavior of the candidate necessarily matter to the religionists or the secularists, or do they kind of ignore that? For example, Biden was a Democrat but an ardent Catholic. President Trump has had a checkered history when it comes to his personal behavior, but yet does very well among the religionists. I just wonder how that difference is parsed, if it is.
Well, that's a really interesting thing, and it's a really interesting change in American politics that's happened with the emergence of Donald Trump. Evangelicals, kind of hardcore religionists, used to tell pollsters that character mattered. A candidate's personal behavior mattered. You know, in the Bill Clinton years, when there were sex scandals involving President Clinton, it was evangelical saying, well, it's not just the what you do in office. It's not just your policies. It's not just your positions. Moral character matters. Donald Trump comes along, and now the evangelicals are actually the least likely to say moral character mm-hmm. matters. It's more of a transactional relationship. Many evangelicals will say, well, we supported people like Ronald Reagan and George W. Bush and Mitt Romney, and these are good Christian men, but they didn't deliver. Donald Trump, we're not sure if he's a good Christian or not, and we know he's done some things in his life, and he speaks in a crass way, but he delivers. He got us Supreme Court justices to overturn Roe v. Wade. He gets stuff done. And so there is a strong loyalty to Donald Trump among the religionists, especially white evangelical Christians, even though I think they know that he may not be the best Christian. And the secularists are, strong Biden supporters despite his strong faith. They were strong Obama supporters, even though Obama talked a lot about faith. But they do tend to, if they have a choice within the Democratic Party, they're going to support people like Bernie Sanders, who says he's not an atheist, but he's not really a religious person at all. But mainly what they're looking for is a true progressive liberal Democrat.
So the politicians, the parties have to attract voters, I presume. Whether it's legitimate or not, they tell the voters what they want to hear, and that's part of the messaging. When you look at 40%, I think it is the number you said, of religionists, 21% of secularists, and the others in between, where are the voters, and who would, you can't do anything if you don't get elected, so where do the parties right. have to go to get elected?
Well, that's what makes life easier for Republicans these mm-hmm. days, is because the core of their coalition and their message has been consistent. Even though policies have changed and the type of candidates, the core of their coalition have been these religionists and particularly, committed white evangelical Protestants, but also increasingly committed white Catholics. Those are their strongest voters. Those are the core of the states where they win, and the South and the Midwest and the Great Plains states. And so they can preach, so to speak, a religious message consistently. Problem for Democrats is they still have strong cores of support among African-American religious people, among some white Catholics, many Latino Catholics. So there's still a strong core of religious faith in the Democratic coalition. And in fact, when Democrats win, those kinds of people turn out and support Democrats in big numbers. When they lose, as in 2024, you'll notice they lost a lot among Latino voters, especially Latino men. They were even way down among black men. So they need support from parts of their coalition that are quite religious. At the same time, their biggest givers, the people that are most likely to turn out, are these secularists, largely white, but they're also a little harder to find and mobilize. It's easy to find religious people. You know where they're going to be on a Sunday morning. You have their names and addresses on church rolls. Secularists, there aren't secular churches. There actually are some gatherings that are known as secular churches, but they're few and far between. So they're a little harder to mobilize than the religious right has mobilized the religious people. So it's a tougher task for Democrats when it comes to religion and secularism and keeping their coalition together and broadening that coalition.
One big giant question before we let you go, and that is, looking ahead to the future, where is the country headed in terms of religion? Where is it headed? What can we infer from that in terms of where it's headed politically? And as a wild card, you got tariffs going on now, the economy, some people saying around back to school, that's when it's really going to hit hard. Where does that factor in all of this?
Well, I wish I had a happier message for you, but I'm afraid the message on religion and secularism is the same as what we see in politics in general, and that's polarization. We're gaining the non-religious people, the secularists are becoming a larger and larger group. But at the same time, these hardcore religionists, the people who are there every Sunday or Saturday, depending on your faith, the people who are reading scripture and praying, they're not really declining. What's declining is sort of that middle, the people who are sort of occasionally attending, who are religious, but in a sort of non-zealous way. And so we're increasingly sort of becoming these two camps of secularists and religionists. And unfortunately, that fits really well with our polarized politics. And you ask about tariffs and economic policy that really wouldn't seem to have anything to do with this. But as these groups have become ingrained in the parties, they tend to fight as zealously about these economic issues like tariffs or health care as they do about abortion and gay marriage.
And the reason I ask, Professor, is that they say it's the economy, stupid, right? So where's the line drawn between what I believe on Sunday and the pocket that I have to reach into during the week?
Well, I think that's becoming increasingly wrapped up in religion or secularism. There are a lot of party politics and just some things that are going on in American religion with the prosperity gospel and things like that, that religion is increasingly preaching an economic conservatism. And these secularists are actually very liberal when it comes to social welfare spending and economic issues. So, shifting the focus to tariffs and taxes doesn't necessarily get us out of the culture wars. These issues are becoming as intensely debated as abortion and affirmative action and guns.
I would think if you're a politician and you can get people to believe that God is guiding you, you're golden.
Yes, if you're a Republican.
Okay.
Because if you're a Democrat, a big part of your coalition doesn't believe in God, and it's an increasing part. And so that's a tougher line to walk.
Professor, I appreciate it. I really do. I hope we get to talk to you again. Very interesting study and a very interesting analysis. We were talking to Jeffrey Lehman, a professor of political science, University of Notre Dame. He and his partner are co-author, I should say, David Campbell. The name of the book is, I had it in front of me here, Professor. What's the name of it?
Secular Surge. And we have a third author, John Green. I should mention him as well.
All right. And you're going to get that all the usual outlets if people want to read about it?
I'm sorry. I didn't catch that.
Secular Surge, the book. You can get it at all Amazon, all those different places?
Yeah, all those places.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate your time. 9:42, 13 till 7. Quick look at traffic. Then we'll talk about the Ponchatoula Strawberry Fest on WWL. And we're back. Tommy Tucker, WWL 9:48. Boy, a big Ponchatoula Strawberry Festival coming up. And here to join us is the queen of the Ponchatoula Strawberry Festival, Alexis Lee. How are you, Alexis?
I'm doing great. It is, of course, a great morning because we are waking up and it is Strawberry Festival week.
It is. Tell me how you become queen of the Strawberry Festival.
So I actually competed in a pageant against eight other fabulous women. We did an interview process. We did a self-introduction portion, and then we modeled on stage and answered an on-stage question. And it was just great spending the days with these awesome girls and competing for the chance to, you know, have this incredible opportunity. And it was just an awesome day, and I'm beyond lucky and blessed to be in the position that I'm in right now.
What was the question they asked you? I'm just curious on stage.
Oh, my question was, what is the biggest challenge that strawberry farmers face today?
And what is it?
I personally said that for the industry itself, it's probably going to be, specifically in our area, it's probably going to be generational farming or the lack thereof. And then for our farmers itself, of course, inflation. I mean, this economy is a struggle, and it's incredible that they're able to come back year after year and provide for us.
Tell me about the festival itself, because it happens, it starts when and runs till?
It starts on Friday, and it runs until Sunday at 7 p.m. It is the largest free harvest festival in the state of Louisiana. So on Friday, it actually starts at 12 o'clock. But it is the largest free harvest festival in the state of Louisiana, and it's just absolutely incredible, jam-packed, no pun intended. No, pun intended, actually.
Yeah, there you go.
Jam-packed with fun. We have a parade on Saturday. It's enormous, and it's just absolutely electric with everyone there smiling, ready to come together and celebrate our farmers. We have our parade. We have an awesome entertainment lineup. We have, of course, awesome people, awesome food. On the festival grounds itself, it is made up of strictly nonprofit organizations, so we love supporting our nonprofits. And other than that, we have a few other events. We have an egg toss. We have a strawberry eating contest. And I'm just looking forward to a fabulous weekend. I mean, if you've ever been to the Strawberry Festival, you know that the one word to describe it is, to me, it's electric.
Mm-hmm.
So I am ready to roll.
Tell me what your duties are going to be this weekend. Do you have any?
My duty is to, of course, be there while promoting our festival and promoting our farmers. I like to say that my job is to be a walking, talking billboard for our festival and our farmers and the strawberry industry as a whole. So I'm just going to be there greeting everyone and thanking them for coming and, of course, enjoying everything that our festival has to offer.
What's your favorite thing at the festival? Do you have a food that you particularly like? Because I'm thinking strawberry ice cream.
I think that I like the fried strawberries.
Really?
I'm thinking that was my favorite last year.
What's that like?
I think they were fried strawberries. Like they battered them and fried them, and I think they were on a stick, if I'm not mistaken. I'm pretty sure there was like a little sauce too. It made it a little fancy. It was very tasty.
Oh, you can't you can't beat fried anything.
Oh, no. Everything fried, count me in.
And then put it on a stick. Tell me about yourself. What do? You go to college? What's your deal?
So I graduated from Southeastern Louisiana University last May. And right now I work for the Louisiana Office of Tourism in Baton Rouge, right next to the Capitol. So it's just awesome. It kind of goes hand in hand with what I'm doing for the Strawberry Festival this year. I mean, we're promoting tourism. We're promoting people to come out and see us and, you know, showing them and telling them how awesome either, you know, my job, our state is, and then with my other job, the Queen Life, telling everyone how awesome our festival is.
How do people find out more about it, Alexis?
So they can visit lastrawberryfest.com, my apologies, or you can check our Facebook. Of course, you can just look up the Ponchatoula Strawberry Festival. We're on Facebook. And if you want to see some of my queen travels, my name's Alexis Lee, and I post everything that I go to, you know, on the every single weekend. I'm also on Instagram. It's LA Strawberry Queen. And,
I can't believe I missed the opportunity. Let me try it again. Alexis, tell me about the Strawberry Festival. You see what I did? Like Alexa, but Alexis?
No, actually, at my house, every time my parents talk to me, my Alexa goes off. So it's we're used to it.
Let me tell you something. Years ago, a guy wrote a story, an article, a book, whatever it was, that if you can sell, you'll never starve. You'll make a living. You, young lady, can sell, and you'll do very well in your life. Congratulations on being a strawberry queen. We'll see you out at the festival, all right?
Absolutely. I'm so excited to see y'all.
You bet. Thank you. Alexis Lee, queen of the Ponchatoula Strawberry Festival. And all you have to do is search Strawberry Festival Ponchatoula. You get all the information you need. 954. Quick break. We'll find out what Newell's got planned for us when we come back on WWL.